check it out now.
Live from the SiriusXM studios at the Wynn Hotel in downtown, not in downtown, on the Las Vegas Strip, for God's sake. I'm too used to doing the radio side downtown. Gil Alexander, it is the Beating the Book podcast for Championship Week in the National Football League, Conference Championship Week, that is, AFC and NFC, where one game is not quite like the other. But we'll talk about both of them here on the show. No compulsory bets. We'll just see if we have any at all. From his mom's cork attic in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Todd Wishnev, everybody, who can be followed at T Wishnev on Twitter, the star of the Showtime docuseries Action. Todd, good morning, sir.
Hey, what's up, Gil?
This is just a compulsory hey, I'm handicapping college basketball. Let me turn to the microphone and say these three words because I have to. Todd, we got a tweet this morning. This is just 5 minutes ago from Keith RF, who says, just as an aside, Gil, your numbers game and Beating the Book are two of the greatest shows going right now, and you do a remarkable job. Kelly, too. Thank you. He says, really respect your takes. Please keep up the great work. Todd Wishnev rules, and I want to be his best friend. Keith RF wants to be your best friend. Are you opening for? Are you open for a new best friend, Todd?
Sure, anytime. Bring him down.
Keith, I'm sorry. Todd is on.
See him at the Rivers.
See him at the Rivers. Do you see Keith RF at the Rivers at all?
No, but if he comes down, I'll see him.
Okay. There you go, Keith RF. There's your chance to be Todd's best friend. And Will Hill joins us at not the Will Hill, two E's on the V. He, of course, is the host of the Shoulda Bet More podcast, which he does three times a week. He also writes for FoxSports.com in addition to doing this podcast. Willie, what's happening?
Gilly, what's going on? Three games left. Got to enjoy them. Excited to discuss them with you. And it's a little bittersweet, man. I really enjoy doing these podcasts every week. And we're starting to run out of these, too. When you start to run out of NFL games, that means we start to run out of Megapods. So got to enjoy them while we can.
Yeah, the Megapod schedule is this one now. Next week, it is the 15th annual Vegas Lifestyle podcast. We will bring in a different cast of characters here to talk about all things Vegas for those who are traveling to Vegas, restaurants, shows, music, all that kind of thing. And then the Super Bowl Megapod, where Rufus Peabody will be our guest for Super Bowl 60. I believe I'm supposed to say Big Game 60. Super Bowl 60. Come and get me, Roger Goodell. So we look forward to that. For this show, one of our favorites to talk championship games with us, AFC and NFC. He is a legend in the business, a pioneer. Dr. Bob, everybody, can be followed at Twitter, drbobsports, drbobsports.com. Bob, thanks for doing this. Appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure, guys.
We start with, well, you know, we were supposed to start with the dumb of the week. Can I just, I did this on radio, but I feel like Will should do this one more time on the podcast side. Because for those who don't know, we're on a group chat, some of us. And Will and Chris Felica both had Miami tickets to win it all in college football. And I just think it's worth saying that you have not taken this well. And usually as someone who bets as much as you do, you know, we let this kind of stuff splash off us, but some linger. And this is one of them, huh?
It is. And usually, with the bets I made, 20 to 1, 150 to 1, some pretty big figures coming back my way if it hit. Usually I would try not be a hero and hedge. I just didn't think that price was justified. I wanted to see maybe Miami can get a lead. I didn't want to lay. I mean, just think about it. You're laying 15 to win 5. Is that really worth it? What I thought was an even game. So I wanted to let it ride, see how it played out. Thought I was in good position. 6.5 yards per play to 4.4. Usually you win that kind of game. But it wasn't meant to be, and it has been a little bit tough. Today's a little bit better than yesterday, and yesterday was better than the day before. It's just time heals all wounds, but certainly a tough one the way it played out, being 40 yards away. And you get emotional attachments a little bit when you make these futures bets to these tickets, to these teams, and to add insult to injury. I wrote up and bet for Fox Sports. I bet it and wrote it up. Fletcher 10-1 to win MVP, which was very live, 116 yards rushing, 117 maybe, 6.6 yards per carry, 2 touchdowns. That would have been a nice cherry on top, but we move on. There's games today. There's games tomorrow. The national anthem is played everywhere, so I'll be all right. We'll move forward.
All right. I just thought it was worthwhile because, you know, even the most veteran betters, sometimes they leave a mark, and that would be one of them. We agreed not to be friends for about 3.5 hours, me, you, and Chris, and worked out for it. You are a kick and a punt away. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Now, as Jeremiah Crow, Miami Hurricanes fan, just said outside the studio, if it weren't for the kickers, Miami's your national champion. But that's how it went. Not that the punter deserves the blame for the block, by the way.
Number 87 didn't even block anybody. I had under 9.5 third quarter. And, well, first of all, if the ball gets blocked and I have the over, of course it goes out of bounds for a safety. But because I have the under, it stays in the end zone for the touchdown. But here's the thing. If I said to you before the game, which team between Cignetti and Cristobal will have a punt blocked for a touchdown in the national championship game, which would you say? I would give Cristobal 122% of that 100%. I'm doing different kind of math here. You can do 122 out of 100. That's what I would have thought. And that's exactly what, it's about buttoned up. And one team was more buttoned up in the end, even though I thought Miami was just as talented. And I was pulling for Miami because of Willie and Chris, but, unbelievable.
Well, you didn't root for me for my 10-1 on Indiana.
I didn't realize you had a 10-1. You were much more quiet about it than these guys who were chirping.
They were chirping a lot. Yeah, I wanted to be respectful. Bob, that game went about according to your handicap that it manifested.
Yeah, I didn't have a play on it. I thought the line was pretty fair, and there were different ways to look at it. Indiana was better than their stats would suggest because they had positive variance in third down efficiency, both on both sides of the ball. They were best in the nation in penalties. So there's things beyond the traditional stats that you could look at and make a case for 7.5 or 8 being pretty fair. I can make a case for Miami just as well. I think my model, just strict model, had Indiana by 6. I was like, well, I can make a case for Indiana too if all these things. And they always play better on Cignetti. They play better than their metrics generally. So why not in this game? They didn't, as it turns out. But I thought the better play was the under. I mean, at 45 on the total, it was 47.5. That could have gone either way, obviously, but I didn't bet that either. So I just kind of watched and rooted for former Cal quarterback and graduate Fernando Mendoza. Go Bears.
And graduate, because he worked the Bears part in. Go Bears. He'll be the number one pick in the draft by the Raiders. I think it's pretty much a done deal at this point. And the betting markets reflect that. All right.
Philly, I just ask you guys about last week when the Bears game, not the Cal Bears, the Chicago Bears. The Chicago Bears, first of all, me and Willie both toward the end of the third quarter, like, overtime? We're like at the same time, literally texting each other, overtime?
You know, it's so funny. Just to jump in quickly, Toddy, I had third quarter tie at plus 275 that hit, overtime at 5-1, and I had Bears plus 3.5, and I bought back with some Rams money line. This is how our weird betting brains work. It was nervous, and that was a nice cash for me and all of those. How our betting brains work with the Miami game the next day. I was so nervous that happened. It gave me bad vibes that I used up all my luck. Isn't that just like a sick way to look at it? But that's really, that really went through my head that it's I'm not going to get these 2 days in a row.
I got the 480 on the overtime at the same time as you. I didn't get the third quarter, but I did have Bears plus 3.5. And right before overtime, I bet Rams money line. So I hit the middle on that.
Yeah,
but what I wanted to talk about in the game was not the amazing play by Caleb Williams. I want to talk about why did the Rams, we're talking about Dumbo, why did the Rams not hand the ball to Kyren Williams
Why can't I do my Dumbo of the Week bit like I always do before you step in before that? Have you learned anything about it?
I wanted to step in before you because you get all the limelight.
I don't. I'm so sorry about that, Todd. Well, let's just do these in order, and then you can talk about this because yes, that's one of them.
Wait, I want to give my teaser of the week first.
It's okay. It's unbelievable.
I want no part of any of these games.
All right. Well, great. We'll get to that.
I'm actually kidding. I actually like one of the games.
Jesus Cristo. All right. Last week there were 12 teams. 6 coaches got nominated for Dumbo of the Week. I don't remember other years where this many coaches do something so stupid in all these playoff games. This week there were 8 teams playing, 4 of them, once again, half the coaches. Here are your nominees. First, the Buffalo Bills, who at the end of the first half just gave up a touchdown to the Denver Broncos to trail 17-10. And then with 16 seconds left, first and 10 at their own 30, they decided to try to matriculate the ball down the field, get a field goal. Well, Josh Allen held the ball very casually with one arm. Nick Bonito hit his arm. He fumbled. It was recovered by Devon Key. Denver got a Lutz 50-yard field goal with 3 seconds left, actually at the buzzer, for the half. So Denver went up 20-10. Those 3 points end up being the margin of victory in overtime for the Denver Broncos. That's so McDermott and the Bills staff are even deciding to go for it as candidate number one. Next game, I know it was a blowout, but 7-0 Seattle, 4th-and-1 at the Seattle 40. Kyle Shanahan, offensive play calling genius, decides of all the plays in his playbook, I'm going to go Juszczyk east-west to the right with the option to pitch to McCaffrey, which ends up in a McCaffrey fumble. The play had no chance whatsoever. Next thing you know, Seattle has a field goal and the route is on. Candidate number two. Candidate number three, Houston. DeMarco Ryan's with the Mike Tomlin Weekly Award of punting to wave the white flag. 28-16, down 12, 5:48 left. Actually, they get the ball. 4:17 left, down 12, 4th-and-18 at their own 21. The Texans punt.
I love the punt. That's their best play.
It was kind of like Tomlin, right? Where you're like, maybe we have a better chance of getting a turnover down in their territory. And then the one you're talking about, Todd, which, sorry to steal your thunder, which stole my thunder, which is 10-10 game. I'll just put it in factual terms. It was 10-10 through three quarters. The Los Angeles Rams had 11 carries in the first three quarters of the game. 11. And then Sean McVay finally decided to get his head in the game, and they immediately go Kyron, Kyron, Kyron. It starts a 14-play, 91-yard touchdown drive where Kyron gets 7 carries in the 14 plays. So who's the biggest Dumbo of the week? I'm sorry, Todd. You can go off.
Let Dr. Bob go first.
Yeah.
Who's the worst? I don't care about this segment, so it's on you guys.
Bob hates me.
Well, tell us what you really think, Bob. You're holding back.
He abstained last time, too. This is beneath Bob, what we're doing.
Okay, yeah. That's no problem. We'll take it over then. That's right. First of all, it's not like you buried the lead also. It's not like the Rams couldn't run the ball. They could run the ball. So it's not like the reasoning. It made no sense whatsoever. I have no problem with the punt. I think it's the best play the Houston Texans have. In fact, I think if they punted every down, on first down, they might have had a better chance to win the game with that ridiculousness by Stroud. And then the Buffalo, this is my pet peeve of every football season. College coaches do it. Pro coaches don't do it as much, but college coaches do it unbelievable amounts of time. Now, in the NFL, you could maybe say, okay, they're at the 30. How many seconds left? You said there were 19?
16.
16? I don't know how many timeouts they have left.
Zero.
Okay. So it's bad. Here's now, even in Mile High, where you say, okay, oh, well, it's Mile High. You know, we can kick a 4,000 yarder because the elevation is 8 million feet and blah, blah, blah. I still think you're not going, most of the time, only bad things can happen. And these college coaches love to do it. They'll take over at their own 12-yard line with 25 seconds and no timeouts, and they're running a play. And I'm like, why? Just take a knee and go into the locker room. How many times have you seen a stupid turnover at the end when there was no upside in the play in the first place? So why would you do something that has no upside? It just boggles the mind. And then, of course, Josh Allen fumbles the ball, and there's your 1 out of 15 times where they do something. So 0 out of 15 times something good is going to happen. 1 out of 15 times something bad is going to happen, and there it is. It happened. You can't have it.
Josh Allen ends up weeping in the post-game presser.
He should have been weeping.
Losing his job. And when asked about it, Terry Pegula, the owner of the Bills, said yesterday, yeah, it had everything to do with the Denver game. Will, is that your vote as well?
I would say it's very close between the three. I would go with DeMeco Ryan just because that's so ridiculous. You're down 12. All you need is 2 touchdowns. I know it's a long shot, but to punt there is insane.
Running the punt fumble. The punt
and
fumble,
throw
Willie.
In the fact that he burned 2 timeouts already, so you're down to 1 timeout. Right. You're basically just saying, I want to go home. Let's get out of here. Let's save face. To me, that was ridiculous. I'll throw in one more with McVay, though, and my vote is Ryan's. To me, it feels like nitpicking or picking on him, but after not running the ball all game, what was it, 3rd and 10? He runs the ball, goes to the 2-minute warning, and just basically it's a give-up down where you've got probably the MVP of the league The Bears That's are saying, right. you know what, please run the ball. We'll take the ball back and we'll go to just one shot to win the game with the MVP. I thought that was bad too, but I will go with Ryan's. I thought he coached a terrible game.
You're right, though. That part about Sean McVay is correct. You have no reason not to throw the football there and try to have the killer play.
Well, you know what that was, Gilly? That was typical NFL thought that we've only given up 10 points all game. They can't get in the end zone on us. They were just inside the five and couldn't get it on us. We're going to let our defense handle this situation. You know, if we can't stop them now, we don't deserve the win. That kind of nonsense.
Yeah. What about Houston not turning to Davis Mills at some point? Mills is that too, one of the better backups in the league.
I'm sorry, Dr. Bob, but you're not allowed to be part of this segment. So we're going to have to edit that out. No, I'm just teasing you, Bob. I thought that was a great point, too. Why not Mills? That's a great point.
And we all love Laura Rutledge. How about you have the coach at halftime? All of us in every text thread in America, Twitter, everyone you're watching the game with, Bar, wherever you're watching the game, saying, should they go to Mills? Should they go to Mills? That's the only question anyone is thinking about. You have the coach in front of you, and you don't ask him. You ask some generic question of, what do you have to do to get back in the game in the second half? You don't say, hey, your quarterback threw four interceptions. Any thought of going to Mills here? Asking in some form. I thought that was ridiculous, dude.
You're not allowed. You're not allowed to ask a real question.
Did you just make the beautiful Laura Rutledge the Dumbo of the week? Is that what you just did?
She kind of deserves it.
I don't have the authority to nominate anyone. I'm just pointing out an observation.
She's overrated.
Bob, no, she's there at the end. Because I was with Bob. I was one of those people saying, how can you play this kid? C.J. Stroud, those six quarters, the two to start that game and the four before that, the week before against the Steelers, could not have played worse. It was just unbelievable how bad he was in those six.
He was bad all year against better than average, against negative EPA defenses the whole year, like against good defenses, like top 12. Look at all year long, he was bad against those types of defenses, and it's fine by me. I had New England, so I was happy with it.
But that's why we. Bob on, because that's something that the naked eye wouldn't necessarily. So he was bad all against good defenses.
Against good defenses all season.
Yeah.
Night and day. If you look at against the better defenses he faced, his EPA per play, any metric, yards per pass, play, anything, relatively even, if you compensated for those, you know, him facing good defense, relatively worse against better defenses, which really is what matters, than against average or bad defenses. I mean, by a long shot.
They're going to have to make a financial decision about him next year. It's going to be interesting to see what they do.
Bob, the financial stuff is brilliant, but here's the real issue, Bob. These guys, they drool over this Laura Rutledge lady, and I think she's cute, but do you think she's some kind of unbelievable, gorgeous woman you've never seen before, Bob?
She's not Malik Andrews.
There you go. Count it, and a foul, Dr. Bob, and one.
Right, yeah. I like that.
Thank well you, done. Dr. Bob.
Also, Malik is a tribeswoman, so extra points, tribeswoman. Okay. Todd, any in-game before we get to the games?
No, I think me and Willie just, we pulled off a masterclass last week. That was one of our best NFL in-game scenarios. We were just popping it all. I mean, not that that happens, you know, all that often in the NFL, but boy, did we were smelling that one right at the end of the third quarter. As he's texting overtime, I'm texting overtime at the same time. It's so funny. Excuse me.
Medic.
My cat, medic. This cough won't go away. I just literally can't get rid of this cough.
What kept you off third quarter tie, Toddy?
I guess I wasn't paying attention. There was a lot of basketball going on and stuff.
Yeah.
That's funny. We're in the middle, and to take people behind the curtain, we're in the middle of these like intense playoff games, Bills, Broncos. You can't even, whether you're rooting for someone or not, you can't even breathe. And Todd is texting out like Robert Morris team total overs, and we're just like laughing.
I texted Will and Felica. I go, Todd is firing on Robert Morris.
I don't know. How can you watch one football game and that's it? I can't watch one football game. That's not enough stimulation. I need other stuff.
All right, now for a segment that is not beneath Dr. Bob, we turn to the AFC Championship. Bob, we give you the floor to break this down. Obviously, it's Jarrett Stidham. That was we can't emphasize this enough. What an emotional roller coaster for Broncos fans this must have been. They win, they advance to the AFC Championship, and we learn about an hour after the game that Bo Nix got an injury on that final drive in overtime. They say it's on an innocuous 2-yard loss when they were matriculating the ball down the field. Some people are like, I don't believe you. I think it was on the kneel down. But anyway, that's what the Broncos are going with. It was 5.5 in favor of the Patriots. It is now settled in at 4.5 everywhere for the road team. How do you see this game, Bob?
You know, when I first heard that injury and I hadn't looked at the look ahead line or anything like that, my first thought was maybe the market will really overreact and I'll get Denver +3. Wouldn't that be great?
That's right.
And the line comes out 4.5 going at 5.5. I saw some 6. I'm like, what are these people smoking? Is this Josh Allen? Is this Lamar Jackson we're talking about? I mean, they're pricing Bo Nix, a fairly average quarterback who averages 6.0 yards per pass play in his career and also this season. And they're making him out like he's an elite quarterback worth 6 or 7 points. Stidham? What's wrong with Stidham?
I didn't say it was. I was just asking.
Yeah, Stidham in his 4 starts in his career is also averaging 6.0 yards per pass play with a 45.3% success rate. Nix is 45.0 success rate and also 6.0 yards per pass play. Nix makes some clutch plays. He's better on third downs. He doesn't throw as many. He runs better. But even this year, his expected points added per play +0.89 for Nix. Stidham in his career, 4 career starts, +0.03 EPA per play. That's a 0.06 difference. That's, about 2.5 points a game. I mean, it's not 7 points a game. They're adjusting more for Nix to Stidham, who's a legitimately decent backup quarterback, then they adjusted for Joe Burrow when he was out against, for Cincinnati this year. They're adjusting more for this than they did for Burrow being out earlier in the year. I mean, it's ridiculous. And also, you think about, I talked about, Stidham's career numbers, 6.0 yards per pass play, a little worse than average. I mean, and his EPA per play would put him around 20th this season among starting quarterbacks. That's not horrible. Also, those games he played, those starts he had, were starts not behind the best pass-blocking offensive line in the league with an elite play caller or with a very good play caller. So there's reason to believe he could be better in this game. The only thing, the adjustment we made was more than 2.5 points. We made it closer to 4 points. And that's only because the speed of the game and stuff like that, he hasn't played, other than, preseason in a few years. So the speed of the game, all that stuff. But, I mean, he's a veteran quarterback. He's been in the system for 3 years. I mean, I don't think he's going to be 6 or 7 points worse than Nix. I mean, Nix is a mediocre quarterback in a good system with a great offensive line. And I think there's some matchups. And you took a look at also Peyton's other backup quarterbacks when he was in New Orleans. Teddy Bridgewater, Taysom Hill is not really a quarterback. He was in college, but Trevor Siemian. Those guys average +0.02 yards per EPA per play, which is not terrible either. That would maybe be a 4-point adjustment with those guys. And I think Stidham's better than all 3 of those guys. So I think Broncos would have been favored by 1.5, 2 points with Nix, and 7-point, 6-point adjustment. It doesn't make any sense to me. So just on value alone, I think Broncos are worth the play. But I also think that the matchup works for them. Sean Payton's offenses historically excel, with layered deep shots and seam attacks when opposing defenses play a lot of man coverage. And Denver's offense this season is averaging 22% more yards per pass play versus cover one compared to other coverages. And Stidham has a pretty favorable matchup. The Patriots play cover one 7th highest rate in the league. So I think the scheming part of it works pretty well. Stidham's also more comfortable throwing the ball down the field than Nick. Stidham's averaged 12.7 yards per completion in his four career starts. Nick's averaged 10.2 yards per completion this season. So I think what Peyton likes to do against man coverage, throw the ball down the field, I think Stidham's actually better suited for that than Nick's is. I think the Broncos' ground games, I think they're going to be limited. New England's defense, pretty good. Not great again, 4.2 yards per rush allowed. Not great, but good. But they're better when, you know, defensive tackle Milton Williams and linebacker Robert Spillane are on the field compared to when those guys are off. And those guys missed a combined 9 games. So their run defense is actually a little bit better than what they were for the season. So I think the ground game is probably going to be held in check. But I think, you know, aside from throwing the ball down the field against cover one, they can attack Spillane in coverage. Spillane surrendered 39 receiving yards per game, which is 7th worst among linebackers. And Denver's offense targeted running backs the 8th highest rate in the league, and they had the 3rd highest screen rate in the league. So I think Peyton's probably going to feature the screen game, which also give some nice, easy completions, you know, especially early on for Stidham. I think they can take advantage in Spillane in coverage against those types of passes. Denver does have some injuries to the wide receiver position. Tony Franklin, Pat Bryant, both listed as questionable. They're probably both about probably slightly more likely to play than not to play. But Bryant's worth, you know, 0.3 points based on my stuff. But Franklin, I don't think is anything big deal. I mean, Franklin averages 6.8 yards per target. Backup Marvin Mims, I'd rather have Mims on the field. Mims had 93 yards on 8 targets last week. He's averaged 8.8 yards on 148 career targets. So 8.8 is better than 6.8. So I'd rather have Mims on the field than Franklin. So I don't really care if Franklin misses the game. Bryant's worth a little bit less than a half a point, like I said. Either way, if both miss, I don't think it's a big deal. Especially if Mims plays, and Mims is more of a downfield threat, which helps against this type of coverage. Stidham likes to throw the ball down the field. So I think Stidham also has probably had more work with Mims being a backup receiver than he's had with the starters. So I think that's not a problem. So I don't think the Broncos offense is going to fall off much. Now, as far as the Patriots offense, I think they're going to relatively struggle. They don't really match up with what the Broncos defense does. First of all, the Patriots have surrendered 5 sacks in consecutive weeks to the Chargers, who have a mediocre pass rush, and also to the Texans, who have an elite pass rush. But Denver's tied with Houston for the 2nd best in the league with a 42% pressure rate, and the Broncos led the NFL with 4.0 sacks per game. In the playoffs, defensive line play tends to matter more. Teams that average 3 or more sacks per game are 46-26-1 against the spread in the playoffs when not laying 7 points or more over the years. It's one of those stats I've kept track of. So defensively, and that goes back to like the New York Giants when they had that 4-man pass rush that got a lot of sacks. Those teams tend to do relatively better in the postseason. That's been going back a long way. It just allows your defense to do more things if you've got a strong defensive line. So that has carried over to point spread success for such teams. Also, New England's got a pretty young offensive line. They've struggled picking up blitzes. Drake May ranks 27th relatively against the blitz compared to a standard pass rush. And the Broncos have the 5th highest blitz rate in the league. And I think they'll have the advantage against May, especially on late downs, since he relatively is better against a standard pass rush than the blitz. And then you've got Patriots rookie left tackle Will Campbell. He had an MCL sprain earlier in the season. He's been back for 3 games, but he's really struggled in those 3 games. He's allowed a 10.4% pressure rate since he's come back from injury, with 3 sacks in 3 games allowed. So he's not quite right. I mean, that would rank among the worst in the league, that pressure rate allowed in those last 3 games, you know, among tackles. And, you know, he'd probably be going up against Nick Bonito, who ranks 2nd in the league in pressure rate. So I think Bonito's going to have his way with Campbell, who's probably still not 100%, didn't look 100% last week. You know, New England probably do the same with what they did against Houston to slow down the pass rush. They throw a lot of screens. They had 4 screens and 6 targets to running backs last week. Screens don't really work against the Broncos. They're 2nd best in the NFL in expected points added per target to opposing running backs, negative 0.23 EPA per target to running backs. So the screen game's not going to work as well as it does against Houston. Houston's not particularly good against defending running backs. That's their one weakness. And then you've got, last week's hero, Kayshon Boutte, 75 receiving yards against the Texans. He has 12 receptions for 20 plus air yards this year, which is fifth best in the league. But New England's, offense obviously better with him on the field than without, but he's going to be going up against Patrick Surtain. Surtain's permitted just 5 receptions of 20 plus yards the entire season. And Denver's defense has the fourth lowest explosive play rate allowed in the last 16 seasons. And they're one of the best at not giving up plays in more than a decade. So they don't give up big plays. So I think Boutte is going to be held in check. And then you've got Hunter Henry. Obviously, then maybe you just go to the tight end. Hunter Henry had a great season, fifth among tight ends in yards per route run this season. But the Broncos are third in the league in success rate allowed to opposing tight ends. So they match up with that pretty well. There's nothing that the Patriots do that the Broncos don't defend well. And one thing the Broncos do like to do is blitz. And Drake May, relatively, like I said, 27th in the league, relatively against the blitz compared to standard pass rush. So I just don't think this is going to, this is a good matchup for New England's offense. So I like the line value. I think the Patriots should be favored by about 2 points, not 5 or 4.5. And I like the matchup on both sides of the ball. So I'm on Denver.
That's a beautiful, that was a Rembrandt, Bob. Thank you for that. I bet Monday morning, I bet the Broncos plus 5.5. I think I had the same instinct that everybody had. And hearing you quantify it like that makes it even, I want to bet 5 times as much now. But plus 5.5 seemed out of whack and bet it immediately. I didn't get any of the sixes that apparently were out there for a second, but I bet the plus 5.5s. This is I'll distill this into one tweet that we got. Now, forgive me for not remembering who sent this tweet. But basically, he said, we can't go a whole 2 seasons saying Bo Nix ain't all that. And then all of a sudden, when he gets knocked out, act like he's Tom Brady when he gets knocked out, which I think is really exactly what you're saying in 240 characters or ever 280 characters or less in a different way. And I just want to add one other thing, which is, Sean Payton has himself an ego. And I feel like there's a little part, Sean Payton, that's like, oh, this is awesome. I get to look even greater with Jared Stidham. And I told this story this morning on the radio side, so forgive me for those who heard already. But my dad was a mechanical engineer.
I love
this. When we used to drive around D.C. when I was a kid, we would always drive back, especially if we were like going to Dulles Airport. I remember a couple buildings on the drive to Dulles Airport. But there was a couple buildings. There's one like it was shaped like an octagon. And then there was another one that was like this weird trapezoidal thing. And whenever my dad, because this was his business, whenever he saw a building that he thought was just an eyesore, he would always say to me, and he would do it every time we drive like he'd never done before. He'd be like, you know what this is? This is an architect who made a monument to himself. That was his line that my dad would say to me. And I feel like this is Sean Payton's game to make a monument to himself. Now, whether it works out pretty in the end or ugly, we'll see. But I think he's unloading the playbook to show what a genius he is trying to get to the Super Bowl with Jared Stidham.
Did you see the tweet that Max Crosby sent out?
No.
He said, I practiced against this guy, and he is legit. Don't be surprised if he lights it up this weekend, basically is what Max Crosby said.
Who, Stidham?
Yeah, about Stidham. Oh, when he was at the Raiders, he goes, I faced this guy in practice. Like, he's legit, basically, was the message.
Todd, Will, you got anything on this?
I mean, I don't think, I wish Dr. Bob wouldn't have said all that stuff because now the line is going to get deflated. But
I already released it. I mean, I released it on Monday, so the line already went down.
So it's already been the cat's out of the bag.
Yeah.
Look, we all had the same reaction when we saw this ridiculous line. I can distill it a little bit, pretty succinctly like this. In the National Football League, there's no such thing as walking to the window and going, I want to bet against the backup quarterback in the National Football League championship game. I feel dadgummit. That's just the way to do it. If you want to make yourself some money, that's how you do it. Okay. I have a feeling that those types of situational plays, and it doesn't have to be that accent. There are a lot of Dumbos with different accents, but I just used that one for this scenario.
Like Pittsburgh, you know, accents, stuff like that?
It could be a Yinzer. It could be a Yinzer. Could go, hey, look, we used to have Tomlin, and now we got new coach in that, and we don't know what we're doing. It's the same idea. Stidham, he ain't nothing. I'm going to get down a window, and I'm going to say to the guy standing behind the window, look, I don't know if no backup quarterback's going to win that game. That guy, I don't know. Anyways, my point is you can't just walk to the window and go, I want to bet against the backup quarterback, which is obvious, and cash. It doesn't work that way, folks. And anyways, you know that Peyton is going to be protecting the living crap out of Stidham. So it will be game management central to the highest degree. Denver will say, look, we're a defensive team. We're going to have to win this game with our defense. Listen, Mr. Stidham, no effing mistakes. No CJ Stroud, no mistakes. You just go out there. If you don't have it, we're punting the damn football. And we'll let our defense handle it. And Bob already explained all the nuts and bolts, so there's no need to go into that. But for me, it's only Denver or nothing. Absolutely no way you could bet on the Patriots.
Andy Molitor, our buddy who does the deep dive with Drew Dinsick, Deep Dive Podcast, he said that succinctly what you were saying, which is because you brought up C.J. Stroud. He goes, everyone's making the wrong comparison. Everybody's comparing Jarrett Stidham to Bo Nix. What we need to be doing is comparing Jarrett Stidham to what we saw from C.J. Stroud last week. That's what you have to exceed, right? And if you just do a little more than that, you'll probably
end up just punt the ball. No mistakes, punt the ball.
Willie?
I'm a little worried. Everyone seems to have the same handicap and the same take that this is just too many points, too much of an overreaction. And I think it is worth mentioning, just because it's an overreaction, even if the line's 2 points high, we're playing one game. It doesn't mean that's going to manifest. Doesn't mean those extra points are going to get you home. But yeah, I like Denver here. I think it's too many points for all the reasons you just mentioned and stuff I've mentioned with the Patriots in past weeks. Very fortunate on fourth down. They've had success through the roof, including last week, which I think this play got lost. A tipped ball on a 4th-and-1 pass, not only caught, but caught for a touchdown. I mean, how often, we watch football all the time, how often does a pass get tipped like that so close to receiver and still gets caught and then it goes for a touchdown? So they've been lucky on fourth down. They've been lucky on fumble recovery. So I like the Broncos here.
That last thing you said, right? Fumble recovery. It's amazing how, like, in the moment we watch it happen and then the rest of the week we kind of forget the circumstances.
Houston,
if Will Campbell, right, there was a fumble at the 3-yard line, 3 yards away from a Houston touchdown, and then at the end of the first half, towards the end of the first half, that would also been in plus territory for Houston. And Will Campbell jumps on both of those balls for the Patriots when it looked like the Texans should have gotten both of them. That's the whole game right there.
Yep.
Just that fumble luck, right? So I think that deserves to be said as well. You're right. All right, Bob, you have a tough act to follow by this guy named Dr. Bob moments ago. NFC Championship, Rams and Seahawks, the trilogy, which I love because usually when one team beats the other twice, Bob is the first person to come on and be like, it is actually easy to beat a team three times. It's not as hard as people think. But this was a split. It was a 21-19 Rams win earlier in the year in a game where the Rams offense didn't do much. And remember, it ended with what's the punter's name? Ethan Evans. Is that his name for the Rams? He pinned the Mariners. Oh, my God. He pinned the Seahawks at the 1-yard line. And because of that, they ended up with a 61-yard Jason Meyer field goal try to win the game. And it did not go in. And the Rams won it 21-19. And then game two was that epic classic game that everybody will remember with the where the Seahawks were down 16 in the fourth quarter, the Rashid Shaheed punt return that cut it in half after the 2-point conversion, and then the touchdown followed by that 2-point conversion that no one will ever forget, the most controversial 2-point conversion, where even the fans in the stands had no idea they had tied the game. Seahawks end up winning it in overtime after the Rams scored a touchdown first. Seahawks get the subsequent touchdown, but decide to go for two and win it by a point. So two really competitive, second one being amazing. Bob, this one's 2.5 in favor of the Seahawks. A little extra juice on the 2.5. It's been that all week. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting about those two games is the team that dominated the stats lost the game each time. First game, I think Seattle outgained LA by around 200 yards. In the last game, you know, and then Seattle won. I mean, the Rams won. And then the Week 16 game, the Rams outgained Seattle by about 200 yards, you know, and Seattle won. So it's kind of interesting. You mentioned in the first game, the Rams really struggled offensively. But I mean, they made the adjustments when they met again. Seattle has a great defense, obviously. They play nickel defense 77% of the time, which is a lot. The Rams were one of the few offenses, especially in that Week 16 game, to go heavy personnel against them. Rams used three tight ends more than 61% of the time in the Week 16 game, and they averaged 6.6 yards per play. And the Rams in general, they use 13 personnel 5.5 times as much as the league average. And like I said, 61% of the time against Seattle in Week 16, that's the way to beat Seattle's defense. You know, Mike McDonald's philosophy is to invite the run and limit explosive plays with the two high safeties. And McVay said, all right, well, we'll just use heavy, you know, heavy personnel. And McDonald didn't really change. He only went with the base defense instead of nickel 9% of the time in that game. So he didn't really change his defense much to match the three tight end, you know, formations that the Rams were using. He just doesn't want to go against three tight ends and put more linebackers on the field because he doesn't want to surrender the deep play action passes. That is going to work for it. Worked for McVay in that first in the Week 16 game, and I think they'll do the same thing again. Why not? McVay should probably use the ground game, use the tight ends underneath. The Seahawks defense, the one weakness they have is they gave up 0.51 expected points added per target to opposing tight ends. 29th out of 32 teams in the league. They were among the worst in the league against tight ends. And so there's another reason to use three tight ends. And the Rams have great tight ends. And they have all three of those guys have been used recently. Also in that game in Week 16, remember the Rams didn't have Davante Adams. They lost their right guard, Kevin Dotson, a great season. They lost him after, you know, 20% of the game, basically. He only played 23% of the snaps in that game. And for the season, the Rams are averaging 0.7 more yards per carry when Dotson's on the field compared to when he's not. So he does make a difference. Now, the Rams controlled that game with the 13 personnel, like I mentioned. Even without Dotson, they scored 30 points in regulation. They had a 16-point lead. Then it was a punt return. And the Seahawks had two two-point conversions and a Rams missed field goal. But the Rams controlled the ball. They had 40 minutes of possession time to 26 for Seattle. And I see no reason, you know, why McVay won't do the exact same thing again. Heavy personnel, throw to the tight ends, use the running backs. It worked in Week 16. They should have won that game by double digits probably. So I think it's a good matchup. Also, one other player and on the other side of the ball who wasn't in that game was Quentin Lake, who's actually a really key component to that Rams defense. And he missed that game. He got hurt in Week 11, I think it was, and didn't come back until the playoffs, the nickelback. So among nickelbacks, Lake is among the best. He conceded just 0.8 yards per cover snap in the slot, which was fourth best in the league. He comes back in the playoffs, and the Rams defense struggled a little bit down the stretch without him. He comes back in the playoffs, and all of a sudden the defense has been solid again, and it's not a coincidence. Rams are allowing 0.6 yards per play fewer with Lake on the field compared to where he's off. That works out to about 4 points a game. So he's been a key part of that defense. And when he got hurt, they struggled a little bit. He's back now. And I think we have the Rams defense rated as the fifth best in the league with Lake back on the field. And, you know, last week they basically gave up 10 points to Chicago aside from basically what was a kind of a Hail Mary kind of thing, 51-yard error, you know, pass down the field to give the Bears 17 points. They basically allowed 10 points to the Bears last week with Lake back on the field. As far as the Seahawks offense, Zach Charbonnet suffered an ACL injury last week against the Niners. Charbonnet, as far as yards per run, you look at Walker, better yards per run. Yeah, that's the fact. But Charbonnet gets most of the carries between the tackles, and Kenneth Walker likes to basically run outside. He only runs 30% of his carries are between the tackles. So the absence of Charbonnet will result in mostly outside zone runs for Seattle's offense. But another reason that Lake being back is so important is he's one of the best run defenders among nickelbacks, and those outside zone runs are the stuff that, you know, is kind of running at him. The Rams conceded only 3.9 yards per carry when Lake was on the field this year, compared to 4.8 yards per carry without him. So this sort of, you know, running, you want to run more up the middle against the Rams, but running outside, I think they've been better in those kind of situations. And Charbonnet also is an underestimated thing about his game. He's a good pass blocker. He picks up blitzes really well. Charbonnet's allowed a 10.0 pressure rate, while Walker's allowed 19.4% pressure rate in blocking. So the blocking could be affected a little bit. Another problem with Seattle's pass protection is the left tackle, Charles Cross. He suffered a foot injury in the third quarter last week. Questionable return, did not re-enter the game. Probably will play, but he might not be 100%. And then you've got, you know, a great Rams defensive line going against the banged up left tackle. They send a lot of blitzes, and, you know, Sam Darnold had a 3.5% turnover worthy play rate when blitzed, which is the fifth worst in the league. And the Rams like the blitz. Also, Rams play 82% zone coverage, which is the eighth highest in the league. And I think they're going to play maybe more because Jackson Smith and Jigba, I mean, you can't cover him, man. If you cover him, man, you're screwed. So I think there's going to be a lot of zone blitzing going on. And Darnold ranked 27th relatively against zone coverage compared to man coverage. So he's much better against man coverage. That's mostly because Smith and Jigba, if you play him, man, you take your chances. I mean, he just had an incredible season, and I don't think the Rams would be stupid enough to do that. They like to play zone anyway, and there's no reason for them not to continue to play even more zone. The other option for Seattle, tight end A.J. Barner had a great season, third best in the league among tight ends in expected points added per target. Rams are ninth best in the league in success rate allowed to opposing tight ends. And safety, Cam Curl's playing really well lately, allowed only two receptions for 11 yards and four targets last week in coverage. So I think there's a lot of things that work matchup-wise for the Rams. Also, I have the Rams rated as my best team in the league and favor the Rams by half a point in this game. So I took the Rams plus the points.
Took the Rams. Yeah. All right. Wow, I had to play in both games. Yep. Just for those who were curious, Darnold threw for 279 and 270 in the two previous games. Stafford for 130 in the victory, to Bob's point, 457 in the loss, which, remember, went to overtime. Puka Nacua led the Rams in receiving with 75 yards receiving the first game, 225 of those 457 in game two. Jackson Smith and Jigba, 105 and 96 to lead the Seahawks in receiving both of the games. And then the weekly, or the rushing leaders in both of the games, Kenneth Walker the third for the Seahawks, 67 and 100, and Kyren, 91 and 70 for the Rams. Toddy, do you have a play on this?
No, I mean, I would just, say, look, the Rams were winning big in both of these games that they played Seattle in. I think we all are probably slightly concerned about Sam Darnold in a big game. You getting points, if I have to bet this, I'm not going to bet it, but if I have to bet it, I've got to take the Rams, because to me that they're, I just think they're the better team. Dr. Bob gave us all the, again, the nuts and the bolts on it. I probably give, even though McVay did make that blunder with Kyren Williams last week, I give McVay a slight edge over the Seattle coach, who hasn't really been there yet, ever. And, sometimes these coaching issues, in these big games, see Cignetti Cristobal, just somehow comes out in a close game that the big coach, the better coach, who's slightly better, does those little things that lead to a victory. So if I'm getting 2.5 points, I think you got to take it.
That's how I lean as well, but no official play. But I did bet the Broncos one. Will?
Yep, I'm with you on the Rams. I like both dogs. I'd rather have McVay and Stafford. Darnold could implode like he did in the playoffs in the game for the one seed last year against the Lions. I mean, Darnold could be hurt too. I know that injury is kind of forgotten about because they won big, but it's not nothing when your quarterback's dealing with an oblique injury and was having trouble throwing the ball, went days without throwing the ball right up until the game. So maybe it's something, maybe it's nothing, but it's a free roll. If he's hurt, that's obviously a big thing for the Rams. And if the Rams had just, changed one play, if the Rams had just won that game and they were on their way to winning it and winning it big, that Thursday night, week before Christmas. The Rams are indisputably the best team, and you know this game's in LA, they're favored. Now, I know all things are not equal because there's a rest advantage for Seattle. Seattle had a bye and basically a second bye against San Francisco. Meanwhile, Rams, you know, life and death for these games on the road. I understand that, but I think Rams may be a touch better, if not equal. I'll take the points here with the Rams.
Just to be fair for the other side of this, Seattle backers can certainly say that Stafford hasn't looked as well, and maybe there's a finger issue with Matt Stafford. Sean McVay, when called out on, like, where was the running game in that game last week, he was the first person to admit that he was like, yeah, I don't know where my head was at with that. So maybe he got his bad game out of the way. The other thing that will, you know, Seattle backers may point to, if you like Aaron Schatz's DVOA as much as Todd does, the Rams are the number one team in DVOA this year. Seattle was the number two team. In fact, in DVOA history, the Rams, oh, pardon me, it's the other way. Well, that's interesting that he has the Rams. Oh, I'm looking at the wrong one. No, Seahawks were number one. Rams were number two. Pardon me. Seahawks end up as the seventh best team in the regular season ever since 1978 in DVOA, and the Rams end up as the ninth best, according to Aaron Schatz. The offense and defenses of both rank high. The difference is, to the Seattle backers' sort of argument, is special teams. Seattle's special teams is a top 10 special teams. The Rams are a bottom 10 special team. So Seahawks backers might hang their hat on that. But I'm with Bob. I'm with you guys. I would lean Rams here. Give me points with what I have felt was the best team in football all year. I'll go with that. Last thing before we go here, there are some hypothetical lines for the Super Bowl. And Bob, I don't think you look ahead to these kinds of things, knowing how you work, as all those years that I worked with you at Dr. Bob Sports. So I have a pretty good idea that you don't look ahead. But I'm just curious, just on a glance at these, if these appear correct to you, correct-ish.
All right.
Seahawks-Patriots. Seahawks are a 3.5-point favorite, total 45.5. Rams-Broncos. Rams would be an 8.5-point favorite. Seahawks-Broncos. Seahawks would be a 9.5-point favorite. And Rams-Patriots. Rams would be a 3-point favorite. By the way, lowest total would be Seahawks-Broncos. Highest spread, lowest total is Seahawks-Broncos. 9.5 on the spread, 38.5 on the total. Shortest spread, highest total, Rams-Patriots. Rams by 3. Total at 50.5. Just at a glance, that feels right to you?
What'd you mention? Seattle, New England, 3.5?
Seattle, New England, 3.5.
Make that more 3. I think Rams over New England, maybe 4.5. So not too far off. I think with the Denver ones, I mean, if Denver wins, I assume Stidham played okay. So... it's really hard to say. And then, you know, the rating I have, I would probably, like I said, I adjusted closer to 4 points just because he hasn't played in a while and speed of the game and all stuff. But a case can be made that it's more like 2.5 points, maybe even no different at all if they're throwing the ball down the field. It depends on the matchups. So my rating on Denver, on Stidham, would probably be less of an adjustment. If he plays pretty well, I probably wouldn't adjust as much. I kind of did it as be as conservative as I can and adjust the most I could, you know, justify. But if he plays pretty well, I'd probably go back, you know, dial it back a little bit and have a little bit less of an adjustment. But in general, those seem about right. I think the one that stood out is I'd probably, you know, if New England's getting 3.5 from Seattle, I'd probably lean a little bit with New England, but maybe not a play.
And no leans or plays on either of the two totals this week?
No, I you know, if you know, my whole thing is they over-adjusted for Stidham. And I had a half unit. I released a half unit play on the Denver New England over 41, which is what it was on Monday morning. It's up to 42.5. So you've lost half of a key number on 41, a key number on 42. So now I'd be like, yeah, probably lean with the over still at 42.5, but I wouldn't bet it now.
All right. Will, Todd, anything on the totals, or are you staying away?
Yeah, I'm pissed off because Lipscomb, we had under 137.5. It's 68-65, 11 seconds left. They dribble the ball around, can't get a shot, and the idiots on Stetson don't grab a guy with 1 second left and make him go to the line. Instead, they let him shoot a three, and it goes in. We're going to overtime, and it's a loser.
Unbelievable. Oh, dear. And not enough of what... Even with the overtime, we can't get our Lipscomb team total over, probably.
Yeah, and it's just, how dumb are these coaches? It just, it boggles the imagination. It really does. It just boggles the imagination.
To go back to football, Gilly, the one that's out there, I saw Circa had it last night. I don't have access to Circa. I don't know if it's still up. The exact result matchups, Rams to beat the Broncos 9-1. I mean, we all kind of like both dogs. That seems a little long. That seems enticing to me, where I could certainly see the Rams winning. Wouldn't be shocked if the Broncos won. And if you just, I know it's a three-team parlay, but if you get both of them in that game, you got a nice middle, if nothing else, set up where you could take the Broncos plus the points. So that 9-1 seemed intriguing.
Well, think about it this way. If both teams are, let's say both teams are 40% to win this week, which might be a stretch. Probably the Rams are, 30, more like 45 or, somewhere between 40 and 45. Denver, maybe more of a 35% based on, to win. Let's say it's both 40, that makes the math easier. Then that's 16% they both win. And then the Rams would be probably 80% straight up to beat Denver in the Super Bowl. So 0.16 times 0.8 is about 13%. So that's what, 7.5-1? So 9-1 seems
pretty
close. Pretty good.
Yeah. Will, you hate it when math gets in the way, don't you, Matt? Will?
I really do. I mean, there's some value there.
Yeah.
You like there's a Texas Roadhouse.
There's a lot of juice on those, but I think there is some value on that.
Yeah, we've talked about all year, too, about the NFC. But that made no sense to me all year, and I know you guys kind of agreed. I don't know if you bet it. I don't think you did, Gilly. But the NFC all year, minus 130, minus 135. I know in our group chat, Fez like, no, stupid bet. Buffalo's going to be in. Then like 2 weeks later, he gave it out. But NFC was looking at us all year, minus 135. Now that's up to minus 230, 235. And regardless of the matchup, you're going to be able to at least get off it or take points or be in good shape here in a Super Bowl.
The math checks out on that price now, minus 235. Based on the possible matchups, I believe. Yeah. So,
you ever seen Will at Texas Roadhouse? He goes, three rolls a basket, 800 children. Each child needs 15 rolls. That's 14,000. So, 22. Okay. Just keep them coming.
Just keep them coming. I leave you with this because Oz Perlman has been on the show before on a numbers game. And Oz Perlman, those know Oz the Mentalist, who is all over all these teams and he was wowing everybody. He predicted Rams. This is a couple weeks ago with the Rams. He predicted Rams 23, Broncos 14 in the Super Bowl. And I'm just going to say this. If that happens, he's a freaking sorcerer.
He already is a sorcerer. Is he ever wrong? Does he ever get these wrong? Because all of these social media clips I see, he just nails everything. It's like, what was your first car? And he writes it down. And it's all of these just obscure, ridiculous things. There's no way. I still remember where I was when he said Dan Marley, and you wrote Dan Marley. He's just never wrong. And it's absolutely the most insane thing you'll ever see.
Do you remember the time he walked up to Will and he said, let me guess, you're thinking about one thing right now, titties? Boom, winner!
I would not have believed this guy had he not done it to me. And when he did, we put up the clip yesterday from a few years ago, by the way, I've aged terribly. But he did a card, right? I pulled one card out of a deck, put it under my butt. He got that card. And then he simply said, think of a guy in any sport that you've never, current or retired, that you've never, ever even mentioned on this show, in the history of this show. And I don't know why Dan Thunder Marley came into my head, and I wrote down Dan Marley, and this motherfucker got it right.
Didn't you say he did something pre the show that was like tricky, like some kind of preparation thing? I thought you said that. You told us that he did something before the show that was a little sketchy or something, or the producers did or something. Do you remember telling us that?
I don't remember that. I don't remember that.
Okay. Because I remember us questioning you and go, did they say anything to you before the show or anything? And I thought you said something, but maybe
that was
I'm
the
wrong.
One thing that he was remote with us, right? So it was just, I mean, in many respects made it even weirder. But anyway, 23.
So he asked you any sport player ever, and he picked Dan Marley, and that's who you were thinking. That is ridiculous. Yeah. That is so goddamn ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I don't even know what to say about that.
Yeah. I was like, my question was, did you guess what I was thinking, or did you plant it in my brain that I was going to go, oh, that's bizarre. Anyway, guys, thank you so much. It was awesome. Bob, a stellar performance as always. I would expect no less. We appreciate the analysis. And now you have made me want to bet the Broncos five times the unit I've already bet it. So I don't know if that's responsible, but that's how I feel now. For all of Bob's stuff, by the way, at DrBobSports on Twitter, but drbobsports.com, Dr. drbobsports.com. During football season, he gives away a lot of free analysis on the website. Do you guys do that in college basketball or not so much?
No, I mean, there's like 1,300 plays a year. I can't, there's no analysis in basketball. It would take me 2 days to write up 1 day's worth of games.
Okay. College hoops, for those who are into that, they do it over there. And then you will resume with pro and college football come fall as well.
Yep. I think I'm back for another year. Close to retirement. You know, I'm 60 back for another year.
Man is never retiring. I don't care what he says.
Yeah. It's just every more year. Time with my kids if I retire. I have no excuse. So I think I'm going to keep working.
Just keep working. Yeah. Todd at T-Wishnev. Todd's still doing his college basketball thing, but it's closed for signups. Hope you got in while the getting was good. And Will, should a bit more podcast. When's the next episode?
3 days a week. There'll be one Friday. John Jastrzemski talking a little conference championships, some Yankees, some Mets. So starting to turn the page here to other things is baseball. Still a little ways to go, but we're getting there.
Any relation to Carl Jastrzemski or Mike Jastrzemski?
Very related. Extremely
or
related.
Or Diana Jastrzemska on the WTA.
It's with
tour.
A J, but.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Do you have any plus a half first five bets for us and maybe exhibition Grapefruit League?
Oh, yeah, we're a couple weeks away from spring training, so maybe we'll have some spring training action in a couple weeks.
All right. Good luck to all. Good luck with your bets. Championship week, AFC or NFC. Rate, review, subscribe. Thank you, Will. Please,
to
rate, review, subscribe.
To Will's podcast.
to this one also. 15 years of the Megapod, we appreciate it. Vegas Lifestyle Podcast, 50th annual next week for those who love that kind of thing, who might be flying into Vegas with your buddies. We will review it all. And then 2 weeks from now, it is the Super Bowl podcast, Super Bowl Megapod with Todd, Will, and of course, Rufus Peabody on that one. Then we'll do a whole bunch of tennis and golf and come back for March Madness with these two jabronis as well. We will do that once the tournament is here. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Todd. Thank you, Will. Thank you for listening. Good luck with all your bets this weekend in the National Football League.